Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is August 1st, and we have some bad news for a lot of people. It's been a long 4 years the last 2 days, Matt.
It sure has. It's just letdown after letdown. Luckily, most of them not involving Gary Gensler, so that's always refreshing. We're back to our regular scheduled rugs.
Yes. This has been insane. Like, so many rugs on so many chains, multiple rugs on the same chain in the same day. Where to even start? Okay.
I mean, this is kind of like appropriate because you're in Turkey right now. So rugs are the name of the game.
It's true. This is the land of the rug. In fact, also the land of the cats. Like, maybe well-known fact, but like anywhere you go, you'll just see little street cats just everywhere. And they're not like dirty street cats or anything. They're like cute, and like people take care of them. They feed them. Each store will have their own cat that just chills there. And I think it's because it's just a bad omen in Turkey to get rid of them. Oh, no. If the cat jumps over your grave, it's a good luck sign. But yeah, I heard in China it's the opposite. It's a bad luck sign. So anyways, this is now a cat podcast. Okay, Matt, where do we start? Viper 0 day.
Dude, absolutely.
Really kicked off a lot of the rug drama. So what is Viper, first of all?
Yeah, so since the dawn of time, we've been asking ourselves, why write smart contracts in Solidity when you can write them in any other language? And everyone's favorite language, of course, is Python. So big Python enjoyer here, probably spent 12,000 hours in total writing Python, 0 hours refactoring or fixing my bugs or any of that. Big prolific Python enjoyer. Viper is a way that you can write smart contract code in Python that compiles down to like EVM compatible bytecode. People like it for a few reasons. It's generally felt to be like safer and like more efficient. And so it's a little bit like the hardos will write their, like the normies will write their smart contracts in Solidity and the hardos will write their smart contracts in Viper. And it compiles down to like EVM compatible bytecode. I didn't realize Viper was actually this popular. I thought it was more of a like semi-academic, like, you know, some people were using it, but mostly people were not kind of thing. Yeah. It actually turns out it's being used in a lot of places. So if we pull up the rec.news article, obviously the first place it was used is in some of the Curve pools. So basically there was a vulnerability in Viper.
So Viper itself is where the vulnerability was, not in Curve or any of the bigger names that you're hearing about. So like, if there's a bug in the compiler, like what does that mean exactly? Like, you can basically as a non-developer, I have no idea how to use that to rug.
Let me give you a little throwback here. So you might remember our Fundamentals of Smart Contract Security podcast episode from way back in the day. One of the things that we talk about there is a re-entrancy attack. And that was, you might remember, what was used in the original DAO hack, was a re-entrancy attack.
Okay. So, for 10 seconds, what is the re-entrancy attack again?
So basically you're supposed to follow a certain flow when you go through like your smart contract program. You're supposed to perform checks to make sure that everything that's supposed to be valid is valid, effects, which are like the direct effects on like variables in the smart contract, and then interactions, which are like third party smart contract interactions. So checks, effects, interactions. If you don't order those things properly, what you can do is you can have something that says, like, for example, in Uniswap, I want to swap some, what's my favorite token? Hamster token for ETH, right? So usually the way this works is first it checks that I'm sending the right amount of hamster token, then it checks that I'm trying to take out the right amount of ETH, then it makes it happen, done. But when I get my ETH sent to wherever, I can actually have it sent to another smart contract that goes and does this again. And if it's not checking every time that I'm submitting the right number of hamster tokens, I can basically just recursively pull ETH out again and again until the contract finishes. And then I just like end it and I take all the ETH, having deposited one set of hamster tokens and just taking ETH as if I had deposited it again and again and again. So re-entrancy like re-enters that part of the code logic where I'm getting the ETH. So you enter it once by, you know, selling your hamster tokens, and then you enter it again to get more ETH and again to get more ETH. And so it's called a re-entrancy attack.
Okay.
And in general, you can protect yourself against this by using something called a re-entrancy guard. And so this is really nice, like an open Zeppelin piece of code that like makes you generally safe from this sort of thing. Unfortunately, the re-entrancy guard in like specific versions of Viper was not working properly.
Okay, so the first I saw of this was actually JPEG'd, this NFT finance protocol doing like NFT loans. Yeah, they basically got their pools drained of $11 million. I guess they were using Viper, and so whoever the attacker was able to drain like I don't know, like 5,000 ETH or something like that.
Yeah, and you can imagine where they do this, right? Which is like they're supposed to be depositing an NFT and then borrowing ETH against it. They deposit the NFT once, and then they borrow ETH, and they borrow more ETH, and they re-enter the borrowing ETH part of it, and they just drain all of the ETH.
Okay, I see. So yeah, like JPEG was the first one that I saw that was like getting drained. And then the funniest part was I think Curve itself, or somebody that was like adjacent, then like went on Twitter and was like, oh, I can't believe people are still using these kind of like fucking compilers and not just writing a Solidity or whatever. And then immediately like Curve starts getting drained. Yeah, like, was it basically the same kind of attack? Like, no difference, really? Like, once you're able to do it with one protocol, like, you can kind of just use, you can kind of drain any protocol that's using Viper? Like, how does that work?
It's like, so the specific version of Viper had a re-entrancy guard that was faulty, yeah. That, like, didn't actually, like, guard you. And so you could perform, you know, different re-entrancy attacks, but still re-entrancy attacks across the board. So yeah, like JPEG was the first one. It was PeckShield actually flagged it. Those guys are never want to see that. They always tweet like, "Hey, protocol, you might want to take a look."
And then Etherscan.
That's like the stuff of nightmares for DeFi developers. It was JPEG, Alchemix, Metronome, which I've never heard of, and Curve itself. And so it's not like every Curve pool. But there were like pretty substantial Curve pools. So there's like the CRV ETH pool was actually vulnerable. And so they were able to like drain a fair amount of assets from there. Luckily it wasn't like across the board because a lot of the pools had been deployed with like a lot of different versions of Solidity and Viper. Overall just like pretty down bad. This is a huge issue, right? This is like, if there's an issue with the like compiler, then anybody that was using that for that version of the compiler is vulnerable at that point. And so it's possible that there's even more places where this was used that we just don't even know about yet.
Yeah. Okay. So then let's get to the actual curve portion of this. What exactly happened with Curve? Like, so obviously they started getting drained. Like, what are the spillover effects about this? And like, yeah, like we'll catch everybody up. But like, what was the initial kind of thing? Like, why is Curve getting drained? Like, lead to a bunch of other bad stuff in DeFi? I mean, obviously that's kind of sounds obvious, but I think some of the consequences were like not really that clear initially.
Yeah, so I mean, effectively, anytime you get exploited, that's not great for your token price, right? And the Curve token has already been like subject to like a lot of like negative sentiment because the founder bought like a $50 million mansion in Australia, And in order to buy it, he took out loans against his CRV tokens. Not great. These loans are across a whole bunch of different platforms. And so as the price of Curve goes down, he gets closer and closer to getting liquidated. This was potentially an issue, like, I think a month or so ago. But he managed to, like, top up his collateral in time to, like, not cause cascading liquidations. But now, like, the Curve price is organically falling again. Last time it was much more speculative. This time it's more organic because the protocol itself had an exploit. The problem with this is that, like, Curve is just very low liquidity. It's low liquidity across the board, both on-chain and off-chain. It's like the plus or minus 2% on the books on Binance is like less than $1 million. So yeah, if you trade $1 million, if you sell $1 million worth into the Binance bids, you'll move the price by about 2%, which is nuts.
And the other thing is that a lot of what's happening in the way the Curve price is read is everything is using Chainlink, right? Like Chainlink oracles kind of drive the price of this, and that's how Aave decides to liquidate. And I don't remember if it was Binance or Kraken or Coinbase or whichever centralized exchanges, Curve was trading at like 66 cents. And on the DEXs, it was trading at 13 cents. Oof. So if way more of the liquidity is on Uniswap and Curve itself, or not, maybe not Curve, but like, I don't know where it is, but like it's on DEXs, right? And so if the Chainlink Oracle actually had been more weighted, like properly weighted to the DEXs where all the liquidity is actually sitting, it would have actually liquidated his position. And it didn't do that because it's more weighted towards the sexes, or just more evenly weighted. And so it actually saved the whole position. And then he started topping it up after. But like in a theoretical scenario, like what would happen if he does get liquidated? Like, does that just mean like Curve goes to zero, or like Curve just gets like tons of Curve basically comes onto the market, it gets market sold, it drives down the price of Curve? What happens then? Like, does it cause a whole like cascade? Does it just create like loss of confidence in the Curve protocol to the point that it dies, and then all these stable coins start to depeg? Or like, what would be the doomsday scenario there? And like, this might still happen. He is paying very heavy interest on his loans right now, and at some point, like, you just can't keep paying that back. So what's the doomsday scenario here?
Okay, so really the people most at risk of bad outcomes are the lending protocols. So it's Aave, Frax, and what's the third one? It's primarily Aave and Frax, right? When you look at like a liquidation, right, the way it's supposed to work is you sell the collateral at a discount to its like, you know, value, right, like obtained by Chainlink, and you sell it at a discount, and then someone steps in and buys it from you at a discount, and then you get the cash from that, and you get to use it to pay back the lenders. So say, you know, you borrow like $1 million worth of Curve, right, and then the value of that, and you know, you have to over collateralize. So you put in $2 million, right, in collateral worth of Curve to borrow $1 million worth of USDT, right? People out there have lent that USDT, and they very much want to get paid back. So as the value of Curve drops and it gets closer and closer to $1 million, you start to have to like think about liquidating the collateral. So you might take that $1 million worth of collateral and say, look, you might take that collateral, maybe it's valued at 1.2 right now, and you say, look, like, I will sell this to anybody that's willing to give me $1 million for it, because I just have to pay back my lenders that lent out $1 million USDT. Someone comes in, they buy 1.2 million worth at a price of 1 million. They're happy. They make a quick 20%. And then they take those Curve tokens and sell them and pocket the difference, right? The problem is that they can't sell them, right? There's nowhere on chain that can really handle the volume of outstanding like Curve denominated collateral. There's nowhere on chain, there's nowhere off chain. It's just a very illiquid token. And so the problem is that like you have cascading liquidations now, right? Anybody that has an outstanding loan on Curve, when those tokens get sold, it drives down the market price. And then that if that price triggers another liquidation and another liquidation, another liquidation, it could eventually spill over and snowball into like these massive curve loans. Let's talk about the other issue though, which, and so as a result, like you can't get anyone to buy that 1.2 million worth of curve for a million because they're like, bro, I know it's technically worth 1.2, but no one will actually give me 1.2 for it, right? Like there's just nowhere that has enough liquidity available for that. There is no buyer at 1.2. Yeah. This is the challenge with using the last traded price as the de facto price, right? Is that like there is no, you know, there isn't just that much liquidity available at that price, right? Mm. It's kind of similar to the issue of using floor price for NFTs, right? If there's no buyer, it's not worth the floor price. Let's unpack though the other issue here, which is that the Curve founder Egorov currently has 59 million Curve supplied against 15.8 million worth of Frax debt. Okay, now this is so interesting. This is from a thread from Delphi. The interesting thing about Frax is, though this is much less Curve collateral and stablecoin debt than his Aave position, it poses a larger risk because of Frax Lend's time-weighted variable interest rate. Currently, it's sitting at 100% utilization, right? Which means that nobody's willing to like lend more to Curve, right? Like all of the assets that can be borrowed against Curve are being used, right? Because nobody wants to be providing like loans to that asset. At 100% utilization, the interest rate will double every 12 hours.
So that's what I'm saying. There's no chance that he can pay the whole thing back.
Just wait, right? So the current interest rate is 81%, but it can be expected to increase to the maximum of nearly 10,000% APY after just 3.5 days. This was written almost a day ago. So there's no way to even like pay down that interest quickly enough, right? To make it. And the other problem is every time this guy tries to pay down his debt a little bit, the utilization goes right back to 100 because everyone's like, oh, thank God I can get out. And then they pull their assets, right? Because nobody wants to be providing liquidity to this. So as soon as he pays back a little bit of Frax, everyone's like, oh, thank God there's some Frax left. I'll take that. Thank you. And then it goes right back to 100% utilization. And so the market's just completely lost confidence in Curve as an asset. The astronomical interest rate could lead to his eventual liquidation, regardless of the Curve price, because there's just no way to pay back the interest quickly enough, right? At a max LTV of 75%, the liquidation price could reach 51 cents within 4.5 days, which is less than a 10% decrease from current prices. So, like, liquidation at less than 10% down, really, really bad. And then the problem there is that's 15 million worth of Curve, which is quite a bit on such an illiquid asset. And so that in turn could potentially drive prices all the way down to past the liquidation price for Aave.
Yeah, so let's go down this prediction market rabbit hole here. Like what do you think are the chances of like Curve going straight to zero? Like what is this going to be saved? Like a lot of crazy stuff has happened, right? Justin Sun came in and did an OTC deal to buy more Curve. So I think this guy could pay down some of the loan. GC, Gigantic Rebirth, I think came in. Like there's a bunch of like random like big buyers that are coming in and trying to, I guess, I don't know if they're acting in good faith or they just want to have the upside on a potential Curve like comeback or like, but like, what do you think is actually going to happen here?
I mean, this is super risky, right? This is effectively like the same scenario we saw with FTT, where CZ was just like, nah, fuck it, we're market selling. And then it triggered everything, right? If you sell those CRV tokens to someone who turns out to be a bad actor, they could take them and in turn use them to dump on the market, right? And that could trigger liquidations right there. So it's very risky territory. Assuming, though, that... Like, look, here's the thing, right? Aave defaulting is bad. And it's quite a bit of money too, right? This guy's got, 63 million borrowed on Aave. Aave doesn't want to eat that bad debt, right? I think they probably could out of their like bad debt savings, but they definitely don't want to. And it's a bad look for the industry. This whole time, for the last 2-3 years, we've been saying, well, CeFi broke, but DeFi didn't break. DeFi's about to break, right? Like Aave defaulting on this bad debt is DeFi breaking. Curve should have never, ever been a loanable asset, right? It's only there for legacy reasons because it was part of this like DeFi 1.0 thing and handshake deal or whatever, and it got past the DAO or whatever. It never should have been there, right? This is just like an unreasonable asset to have as collateral, especially with this kind of like super high amount borrowable. So I think, you know, I think everything will work out, right? Because I think that there are enough people with enough cash on the sidelines that have enough vested interest in Aave not defaulting that they will be willing to buy back Curve at like a steep, steep discount. And it will enable this guy to unwind at least enough of his loans that we don't need to like worry about it, right? But the game theory here is if you hold Curve, you should sell it, right? Say you're bullish on Curve and you're holding it here. The smarter thing to do is sell it, kick off the cascading liquidation. I mean, someone was tweeting about this last time Curve was in danger. The smarter thing to do is kick off the liquidation and then buy it back like when it's close to zero, right? Like your game theory optimal outcome is a liquidation. But there just might be enough people with enough friends with enough capital to get this thing saved.
Yeah. And, but like the longer term thing is like, is anybody going to use Curve ever again?
Curve itself is fine other than the fucking Viper, issue.
But I just mean like as a,
and Curve itself isn't in danger, right? Like say the liquidation happens, it's fine. Yeah. It's still fine. Like Aave is the one in danger as is Frax.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I just mean more as like a more of like a social thing, you know? Is it like has it tainted the protocol so much that everybody just kind of decides to move to something else, even though there's no money market protocol like Curve out there?
Yeah, I mean, what else are you going to use for stable swaps, right?
Yeah,
it just like is what it is. I would say, yeah. I mean, having said that, TVL is much lower, right? It's dropped by about 50% over the last week. So it's not great. But you know, one of my colleagues likes to say, never underestimate the market's dyslexia, right? Curve itself doesn't appear to be at any kind of risk here. Aave appears to be at huge risk here. But people are still withdrawing from Curve.
All right. Well, we'll find out what happens in the next like 3 days. We might have to do an emergency episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's hope it's one of our time zones if it happens.
It has to be. By definition, it has to be one of our time zones.
That's true. That's true.
Okay, let's move on to more rugs. Next rug. Can we count all of Base as a rug? Mm-hmm. Do we have to go project by project?
Wait, there's more than one project? Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, there is. Oh my god, I forgot.
Dude, I aped in so hard to this like random shitcoin I found that was just looking so promising, and all the liquidity was stuck on fucking Leet Swap, which drained or which got exploited, and the guy took like 200 ETH or whatever. But my project is not affected. They've been. Because they didn't revoke the
LP.
Yeah, the LP. And so the protocol can get it back, I guess. Or it just didn't get drained. So we're safe. We're safe. Bullish, non-revocal.
I am the DAO, yeah.
Okay, we should go backwards a little bit because we just went all the way deep. People probably have no idea what we're talking about. So
let's talk about Base.
So Base is an L2 built on the OP stack, the most popular words in crypto right now.
True. For now.
Built on so the OP stack is the Optimism stack, I guess. Like Optimism is the L2, but they have their own kind of, I don't know if they have their own SDKs or like what they have, but you can basically spin up your own L2 using the OP stack. very important to note, they don't have fraud proofs live right now. This is a very key point. But yeah, Base launched on mainnet like 2 days ago, or it launched its mainnet 2 days ago. Immediately, within like 5 minutes or something, one of the first contracts deployed was a meme coin called Bald, in reference to the founder of Coinbase, Brian Armstrong, who has a very shiny bald head. What's funny is like all the other crypto companies I've worked at, this is always a running joke. Like people would even make emojis like Brian Armstrong, shiny bald head. Like all this kind of stuff is funny. And so whoever made this coin, not saying for sure that it was SBF, but it seems like it was SBF. Whoever made this coin is definitely in on the joke. They have a good sense of humor, which makes me think it's SBF even more. But anyway, so this thing launched. There were a bunch of like people going ham on Twitter, like, oh my God, I just turned $500 into 1.5 mil. Like, this is insane. Blah, blah, blah.
They also deposited a shit ton of liquidity.
Yeah. So what happened was initially people started just buying it, you know, aping into it, whatever. And then the deployer of Base put in like $20 million worth of liquidity. It's very unprecedented for a meme coin to put in $20 million worth of liquidity. There were a ton of rumors initially that it must be a Coinbase inside job. Like, who else is going to put in 20 mil? I had a ton of theories myself. I was like, it must be Charlie Lee. He's been known to do insider trading at Coinbase while working at Coinbase. Also a big rugger. So I was like, it's got to be Charlie Lee. But turns out it was not. Well, we don't know, but probably not Charlie Lee. Another insider, not at Coinbase. But yeah, they put in tons of liquidity. It basically ran to like $100 million market cap. And then the next day, the deployer just pulled all the liquidity. They made like $5 million. They made over 3,000 ETH. And then they pulled all the liquidity out. And yeah, everybody got rugged. Tough scene. Yeah, did I miss something there?
I think so. Then, you know, then the rumors started coming out, right? Which is like, who is this person? They apparently have a lot of CBETH, which is another reason that people are speculating that it's a Coinbase insider. Mm. They have, I guess, some ties to, I saw some Etherscan links that involve like Alameda and FTX. And, you know, the prevailing conspiracy is that it's SBF. And apparently, SBF does not have access to a normal computer, nor a normal phone, nor a normal anything. His internet is limited to whitelisted IP addresses, including New York Times. I think not Twitter, notably, even though a lot of people are word, what do you call it? Shape rotator word something.
Word cell.
Word cell. Yeah, a lot of word cells are going in and looking at like writing patterns, sentence patterns, like, you know, terms of phrase, like pieces of like of speech that that SBF uses that are similar to words that are used by the deployer of Bald. Allegedly, there's no way it could possibly have been SBF, but it kind of feels like the deployer of Bald is trying to like, you know, encourage these conspiracies or these allegations, right?
Yeah. I mean, if it's not SBF, I don't know, man. Who else in the world owns 49% of CBETH? Is
they open 49% of CBETH?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Was willing to deposit like $20+ million, bridge it in the first few minutes. Like, the only people I can think of that would be doing this are Justin Sun, Charlie Lee, another random Coinbase insider, but I don't think they're that stupid. Like, why would a Coinbase insider do that? Or SBF, or somebody in that circle, right? Like, I, who else could you name? Like, I don't know, maybe the Curve guy.
Why not CZ?
Yeah, CZ. Actually, yeah, that's a great, great, great point. Wow. Giga brain point, dude. CZ to get all of the attention off of Binance launches the biggest rug pull in of the whole year on Base the moment it launches and frames SBF. Wow. Nice, Matt. I didn't even think of that.
This is
Dude.
people have been calling me Giga Brain. I'm shooting for Micro Brain, somewhere between micro and nano brain.
Want to be anywhere in the middle, you know? Small brain to the max or giga brain. I know where I sit. Wow. Okay.
Anything else? Anything else on Vault?
Yeah, so Bald then destroyed the whole Base market. People are going ham. They're like, wow,
Oh
Base is
yeah,
the
can we
new.
talk about the bridge real quick?
Oh yeah, the bridge. So the bridge was pretty interesting. Like, it's different than most other bridges that I've used in the past. Usually there will be like a UI where it's like bridge here, or like, you know, I don't know, click this button and bridge your assets over, and then add the RPC to your MetaMask, and they'll show up at some point, hopefully. Coinbase was the like completely different, like, or whatever Base, it's completely different. It was like, there's this proxy address, send your funds here. Everybody uses the same address, and we will deposit it to your Base. Well, the same exact wallet. It can only go to the same wallet, also. So you're just like kind of doxing yourself, I guess. I don't know, whatever. But can only go to the same address, and it'll just show up there at some point when you add the RPC. So functionally the same thing, just so weird how they did it.
Was there a website? I saw people using Etherscan
Etherscan for what?
to deposit their assets into this proxy address.
Oh, I mean, I was just doing it in my wallet. Like, you could literally just do it
Okay.
straight to the wallet, like just
You
in
just
MetaMask.
copy paste the fucking address. Wow.
It was like on the docs. Like, 10 people pinged me. They were like, yo, man, is this the right doc? Like, what's going on here? I was like, yeah, it's in the docs. Like, just use that address. And then classic ETH, you know, I was like trying it out with like 10 bucks, and it cost me $5 to send. All right. But it made it there like after 20 minutes.
Nice.
But the key thing is, you can't bridge back right now.
Yes, that's it's Hotel California.
Yeah, Hotel California. Which is kind of bullish, you know? Everybody's bridged over and they're like, all right, what do I do now? You just got to keep aping new random, I don't know, new rugs or whatever.
Yeah, man. We used to say this about like whenever there was an exploit and a bunch of ETH got stolen and like it was sent to Tornado Cash. It's like, man, that ETH is not available for sale on centralized exchanges anymore. That's bullish. Supply reduction.
Supply reduction. So then there was really like one market mar or like one DEX that really had all the liquidity on it, and that was LeetSwap. They are a team from Kanto, actually, your favorite chain. Yeah, they like, that's their whole thing. They just deploy to new chains fast. So Kanto team, or they were deployed on Kanto early. Kanto like activity fell off, so they deployed on Base, like one of the first deployers on Base. And somebody found a vulnerability there, exploited it, took 200 ETH. Let's see. Yeah, a lot of LP, I guess, is just gone now forever. Like, yeah, like people just kind of got screwed there.
Man, what a shit show. Even the decks rugged.
Yeah, even the DEX rugged. Then the funniest part is LeetSwap team like sent an on-chain message to the guy who did the exploiter, the hacker. They're like, okay, listen, man, we'll let you keep 50 ETH out of it, and then we won't prevent you from bridging out. And it's like, dude, this is the worst threat I've ever seen.
Yeah, what?
Like, come on, man, like, just say you're willing to pay him 50 ETH, and that's probably not going to be enough, but like, whatever. So yeah, RIP to everybody who got rugged on Base, everybody who got rugged on, actually, nobody really got rugged on Curve right now.
Unless no, people got rugged. If you had like LP and like those tokens got stolen, like you're rugged. Your LP is worthless now.
Oh, true that. True that.
Can we talk for a second about the White Hat MEV bot?
Yeah. Can you explain this?
Yeah. So Curve, like the Viper vulnerability is discovered, right? And someone sends a transaction to try to exploit the vulnerability in one of the Curve pools to steal 2,800 ETH, right? But there was an MEV bot that's like just like searching the mempool for profitable transactions. And this is what you call generalized MEV. Where you look at the transaction, you replace the sender's address with your address, and you simulate, and you say, would I have made money? And boy, would you have made money. So then you offer like a large bribe to whoever's building the block to make sure that you're the one that gets to submit this transaction first. It turns out that this was submitted by a generalized MEV bot called coffeebabe.eth. And coffeebabe.eth returned the funds 24 hours later. Which is so sick. Like, how cool is that?
Yeah. That's, true white hat behavior.
Yeah. Generalized MEV bots are so interesting, man. It's just like, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know if what they're doing is legal or not, right? This is probably something you have to have a plan for when it comes to generalized MEV, right? Is like, if there's an exploit, I'll give it back, right? Like, if I'm running a generalized MEV bot, I'm sure as heck not going to, like, front run a transaction that exploits like a vulnerability and then not send the ETH back. Of course I'm gonna send it back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good move. All right. Well, that was probably all the rugs, man. It's been a crazy like 3 days or whatever, 2 days.
Yeah, it sure has. You want to talk about everyone's favorite chain?
Wait, I thought it was Base.
No. This one goes out to our friend Zach.
Zach, Pulse Chain. It's bad news. Oh yeah, another rug, man. Bad news for all the hexagons. And whatever pulse enjoyers, I don't. Yeah.
The SEC has sued Richard Hart, the founder of Hex and Pulse Chain. This one feels like a long time coming because he said a lot of things around like Hex is the best investment you can possibly make, and like we are here to guarantee like high returns for token holders and shit like that. It's just basically the opposite of a good look. And it's honestly amazing that it took this long.
This guy has been rugging for years and years. I don't know. It's about time, I guess.
I guess. I mean, the thing about it is like Hex is like kind of boring, right? Because it's a lot like Cardano where it's just like everyone loves to hate it. And like, so there's nothing really interesting to say.
Yeah, I don't really have too much here. all right. Well, Matt, before we go, what's the next rug? What are you looking forward to getting rugged on next?
Oh, the next rug? Oh, man. I still like this boredom meta. So we had Hamster Racing. Yeah. We had Tetris on the blockchain. I can't wait to see somebody come up with like something like even sillier. Like, what else do you do when you're bored? Like, I don't know. Maybe we just go full on back to Spank Chain.
Baby, wow. Mm-hmm. I like it. I mean, I just was looking at, like, why is there not a prediction market on whether or not this guy will default on his loans? Come on. This is just such an obvious thing.
Well, dude, prediction markets are, like, they just don't have the liquidity, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, come on, man. We got liquidity on a Hamster Racing protocol. Like, we can make and create liquidity. If the product is good enough, like, I don't know. If there's a Telegram bot that has a prediction market, you can just send in 0.1 ETH to vote yes or no, and then it doubles your money. Like, I don't know. I think that's pretty good.
Dude, Telegram bots are by far my favorite meta. Great meta. Yeah. Where's Unibot trading at now? I told myself I was going to buy the last dip, but I'm going to fade it again.
what is it at? Probably like 110, 115 million.
113. Goodness.
Wow, what a nice call, bro.
I was this close to buying it at 196.
Oh, baby.
And I said, wait. You have to fade me. You have to fade me every single time. I am so bad at this.
The ultimate GigaBrain move is when you fade yourself. You know, you're like, oh, this is a trade that I would normally make, and I will fade the trade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Not financial advice, but I'm about to go buy Unibot. Because I'm feeling like fading it.
All right. Well, there we go. That's where we leave it. This was not financial advice. This has been another episode of the Decent Crypto Podcast. We'll be back in a few days with our next deep dive. What should we talk about, Matt?
That's a good question. Let's ask our Telegram group. We should probably say something.
True. It's just been. We do have a. We haven't announced it yet. We have a Telegram group now. Yeah. So everybody join the Telegram group. I'll link it in the podcast today. And until next time, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.